Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning, everyone. It is the 25th of September, and here we are again on Faith Radio Mornings as we wait for the sun to rise, knowing the Son of God is risen, and we can gather together as we start our day to talk about the important news and topics that are going on in our country, maybe in our states, maybe in our families, and we'll do so with trusted voices from around our country that might have different angles, but it all comes from a Christian perspective. And on Faith Radio Mornings, we'll try to address these issues with honesty, with a genuine faith, and with the real hope that only comes because that tomb is empty, and we serve the living King of the only kingdom that knows no end. It's good news indeed. And this is Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner. I hope as you're grabbing your coffee or heading off to work, getting the kids to school, or at least trying to get them out of bed at this hour, most likely, or whatever is in front of you, that this hope can be part of the way you start your day. I say good morning to Logan Rausch and Paul Perot in studio and in the newsroom that help keep the sound moving and flowing smoothly and the news moving all throughout the morning. Paul does such a great job of just filling my desk with news topics that are of interest and top of the mind stories for all of us as listeners. And of course, you know, if you listen to the show regularly, that I absolutely love hearing from you, whether you want to call or whether you want to text the studio. And you can do so at any point in the morning, maybe in response to the guests or some of the topics we talk about at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. You can also visit our Faith Radio Mornings Facebook page where we often post some of the stories or some of the different news items of the day. So really excited for our first hour of the show that we're going to get started with is Tommy Binion. I know is on the line of the Heritage Foundation. He joins me every Tuesday, and he's got this ground-level view of Washington, D.C., living there and interacting regularly with the government agencies there. And he can talk us through some of these just difficult and quite frankly, tiring at times headlines of the Judge Kavanaugh proceedings, and just what's going on with the Democratic Party and sort of the scorched earth approach that they're taking to these proceedings. And I'll ask Tommy, too, about the fact that the Republican Party is experiencing the highest approval rating that they've had since 2011. And so just wondering if maybe the country is getting a little weary of who is the most antagonistic in this situation. And then after that, first guest we'll have Dr. Rosemary Stein in the bottom our second half of our hour, and she's going to talk about the importance of independence with our children. And she's got this phrase that I found interesting called free-range kids. Now, we have free-range chickens at home in our house in Minnetonka, which is just west of Minneapolis-St. Paul. So I'm really curious what Dr. Stein means by free-range kids and the importance of independence. So we'll talk with her in the second half of this hour. But before getting to Tommy and the Heritage Foundation, we do have a quote that we're working through this week, and it comes from Charles Spurgeon. And for those of you struggling with anxiety or maybe concerned about what today holds, Spurgeon said this. It's up on our Faith Radio Mornings Facebook page. He said, "Anxiety does not empty tomorrow of its sorrow, but only empties today of its strength." Anxiety does not empty tomorrow of its sorrow, but it only empties today of its strength. And if you're like me, when I'm feeling anxious about the future, I know that my day really shifts if I just live and swim in that anxiety. So let's worry about tomorrow and do what we can today and enter into Jesus's invitation, who says that come all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. That's what we hope these next 2 hours sound and feel like for you here on Faith Radio Mornings. And we'll join Tommy Binion next as we get started for the day.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the Capitol.
And of course, that Schoolhouse City rock music signals the arrival of Tommy Binion into our studio guest line here. Tommy, good morning. And there's not much to talk about out of Washington, D.C., from what I understand.
It's a slow week, you know. It's what can I say? It's slow news week. Good morning.
Good morning. So is it Thursday yet? That's when we're going to have some of these hearings between Judge Kavanaugh and the accuser. My understanding is that Rosenstein's going to be joining the White House to see if he might get fired and from the FBI. So there's lots going on, or the Justice Department. There's a lot going on here, Tommy. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's start with a dose of optimism. I think we're about to talk about some things that are frustrating They're discouraging, and they sort of sap us of our hope. But I think I have confidence. I have hope that in the end, the truth will win out. Mm. I think that the truth about Brett Kavanaugh and who he is and his sterling character will win out. And I think that we will look back on this as a sad episode, but I think we'll be happy that he was able to clear his name after Thursday. I feel pretty confident about that.
Well, and, you know, it is interesting. I'm starting to wonder, and, me and Tommy, we've been together for a number of weeks now on this show and try to stay as balanced as we can, understanding both sides of the issue. But, boy, it sure seems like maybe the Democratic Party is beginning to overplay their hand a little bit, and the voters and people are getting a little weary of seeing the scorched earth policy and seeing through what seems to be a smear campaign.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that you can see the pieces falling together, that this is orchestrated. You know, Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, she has allegations against Brett Kavanaugh. She shared them with the Democrats in July, and they delayed release of them for 6 weeks. Now, I think there's really two reasons that could have been. One is that they found her non-credible, but they tell us every day that she is a credible accuser. So then the other option is that they have orchestrated this. They have chosen the timing. They have delayed Dr. Ford's testimony so that maybe this other allegation could come to light. It looks orchestrated. It looks political. And it doesn't look like their motivations are strictly tied to what Dr. Ford's motivations are, which is just getting her story out. It looks like they want to weaponize her story and use it against Brett Kavanaugh. It looks like that is driven by an ideology, by partisan politics. We saw Mazie Hirono, the senator from Hawaii, on the Sunday shows this past weekend say she doesn't believe Brett Kavanaugh, not for any good reason that those of us would come up for believing or not believing somebody, but because she has policy disagreements with him and ideological disagreements with him. To me, that was a striking statement, and it explained a lot.
And I think what's tricky about this, Tommy, too, and really unfortunate, and we've talked about this past week on Faith Radio Mornings, is that it really takes us away from what is a legitimate and very important conversation about the way women have been treated, and again, legitimately so in an awful way, to have that conversation. In terms of the last 30, 40, 50 years, some of these things have needed to come to light. Many of these things have needed to come to light. And it almost feels like that's being used now to politicize or even weaponize a Supreme Court confirmation process. And that really can take away from the very important conversation we need to have.
Well, I think that's right, and I think that for all the good that the last year's worth of sort of Me Too moments have done, there is, I think, a real dark side to it, which is that due process is being denied, and that's especially true in the case of Brett Kavanaugh. And when you deny due process, I think that that's going to, like you were sort of alluding to, really backfire. If anybody can accuse anybody of anything with no evidence, no corroboration, no other sort of evidence to back up their story, then I think we're in a real bad place. I think about my son. When he grows up, is he going to be denied due process? Is there going to be somebody that accuses him of something that he didn't do? I don't think that that's the world Americans want to live in. I think they want to live in the world that we've had so far, with an exceptional justice system that provides due process for everybody, innocent until proven guilty. When you're guilty, you're going to be judged. There's going to be a judgment upon you, but we're not going to deny justice to innocent people. And in this world where, quote-unquote, a credible accusation is the only thing that matters, I think we're certainly denying due process and justice.
Yeah, it's well spotted. I know the second accuser that came out over the weekend, Deborah Ramirez, that her accusations didn't even pass the sniff test for the New York Times, which is no friend to President Trump, and yet they wouldn't post the article on that, but the New Yorker did, and that really does speak to the heart of what you're suggesting, that just even an accusation, it doesn't even seem like it needs to be credible at this point to get some play in the public sphere.
That's absolutely right. Even in her own words that she shared with her classmate, and the New York Times reported this, she's not sure it was Brett Kavanaugh. She derailed a Supreme Court nomination, not to mention the Kavanaugh family and Brett Kavanaugh himself, not even sure that that it was him. I think that that is really scary, really disturbing. Sure, you know, we can quibble about journalistic practices. I'm glad that the New York Times saw this story for what it is. But the fact is, it's a mainstream story. It's being treated as a second accusation. I don't even think it qualifies as a second accusation. I don't think it's in the same category as Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. I don't think the Senate Judiciary Committee should give it the time of day as long as she's not sure it was Brett Kavanaugh, or in the past week she confessed that she wasn't sure it was Brett Kavanaugh. It seems to me to be some basic fairness that's missing from this picture. I also think that will backfire. I think everyday Americans, nonpartisan Americans, Americans who they're focused on their family and their work, when they hear about this, you know, they're going to think to themselves, what has gone wrong in Washington that that this is the news story of the day and of the week and, frankly, the month?
You know, it's Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation. Tommy, I'd be curious. There's one more piece of this puzzle we should probably discuss, and that was news that broke late last night that Michael Avenatti is promising to come forth with another accuser he says is credible, that he deals only in facts about some parties that maybe Kavanaugh attended. And, of course, Avenatti is the one who represented Stormy Daniels in her lawsuit and accusations against the president. What do we see in the next 48 hours coming out here from the lawyer Avenatti?
Whatever we see, we should treat with a dose of skepticism. Michael Avenatti is running for president. I went to his Twitter page last night, and his pinned tweet is a two-page sort of explainer about where he stands on the issues because he's running for president. If he were my lawyer, I would not appreciate the way that he has handled this in sort of a self-aggrandizing way. I don't know what he has or what he thinks he has. So far, in the sort of 24 or 36 hours since he's made this allegation, you know, he has brought attention to himself, and that's really it. I hope that if there is an accuser, somebody who is a victim of sexual assault that's hired Michael Avenatti, they think about getting themselves a new lawyer, because this is not how a lawyer who cares about their client acts. Whatever he announces, I am going to be skeptical of because of how he's acted so far.
Well, and I think in all of this, there is an invitation to the church and to the Christian community to keep your eyes focused on caring for the abused, caring for those who really have been harmed and are hurting in our society related to sexual abuse, and maybe not get swept up into the windstorm of non-credible accusations. It's Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation, who does such a great job with me on Tuesday mornings, talking through so many of the headlines of the day. Tommy, we'll take a break. We come back, let's shift our conversation over to the potential firing of Rod Rosenstein as he visits the White House on Thursday. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and excited to be joined on the line by Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation. And Tommy, learned a new word. I don't know if you know this word, but it's confabulate, and it means to engage informally in discussion. And so I really appreciate you coming on the show to confabulate each Tuesday morning like this. Have you heard this word before?
I haven't, but I love it. And now that I've heard it, you know it's going to be one of those things where I hear it again today or tomorrow. Doesn't it always go that way? When you learn a new word, it pops up over and over again. So you've made my next day and a half very interesting.
Well, if you could email or tweet me at any time that word comes up, because in 47 years I'd never heard it, but I do suspect it's going to come. It takes five times to use a word in a day, Tommy, to have it burned in your memory and to be able to, you know, use it as part of your language. So I'm excited for your day ahead.
Well, absolutely. Let's keep confabulating, and we'll see if we can work it in a little bit.
I love it. Well, there is more to get to here, of course, in the news of the morning. And Rod Rosenstein, who is the Deputy Attorney General for the Justice Department, seems to be in quite a bit of hot water because there was some tapes that were unearthed in which he suggested that we should invoke the 25th Amendment to impeach the president shortly after he fired James Comey. That wasn't looked upon very highly by Rosenstein, apparently. And boy, this could have some serious implications this week.
Yeah, it sure could. And there was a news report yesterday that he was resigning or was on the way to the White House to be fired. That turned out not to be the case. A couple things we know about that. One is that the president was out of town. He was in New York. He's at the UN. And that Rod Rosenstein had an extended conversation with the president that he initiated over the weekend. As you mentioned earlier in the show, Rod Rosenstein is going to go to the White House on Thursday for a meeting with the president. I don't know what that meeting holds, but certainly the report in the New York Times late Friday afternoon was explosive. The news that came out about it over the weekend is explosive. There are conservatives on Capitol Hill who have drafted impeachment resolution about Rod Rosenstein as of months ago. So, you know, this is not something that's happening very quickly. I think the president's displeasure with the Justice Department is well noted. And potentially, you're right, Rod Rosenstein will be relieved of his duties this week. But we don't know. You know, we prematurely thought that was his fate yesterday. And, of course, it didn't happen. We'll see if it happens on Thursday. Wrapped up in this is a lot of implications for the midterms, a lot of implications for the Mueller investigation. Of course, the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, is recused from the entire, you know, Russia issue. And that was a decision he made at the outset of the Trump presidency. And that meant Rod Rosenstein was going to be in charge of it and oversee Robert Mueller. That would all change. Sessions' recusal, I don't think, would go away, but certainly Rod Rosenstein wouldn't be in charge of Mueller anymore. That would all be changing if he were to depart his job this week. So we'll see.
Well, the implications are profound for the investigation. And sure, I've sure been hearing a lot about this phrase, the deep state, that some people are suggesting there is people in power actively at work to subvert the election results in 2016. And I know Trump has referenced that a few times as well, that there are agencies actively working against his presidency. Tommy, you're pretty close to it there in Washington, D.C. Does this argument have some merit, or is it just sort of something that we shouldn't be addressing at this time?
No, I think it's very real. You know, the term deep state has taken on a little bit of a conspiracy theory connotation, but I think the concept is on display and it's on the front pages of the news. The anonymous op-ed in the New York Times, somebody said, you know, we're working to undermine the president at every turn. That is absolutely what is meant by the deep state, is that there are bureaucrats and even political appointees who want to stop the president from implementing his agenda. Certainly, if this Rod Rosenstein thing is true, that lends more credibility to this fact that there are bureaucrats and politicians working to undermine this president. And, you know, and I don't think we should be that surprised. I think President Trump got like 4% of the vote in Washington, D.C. I mean, it was something really low like that. And most civil servants, most bureaucrats have a liberal bent. And they have a lot of power. That's the other thing that's important about this, is it's not as if a president wins an election and takes over all of the power in Washington, D.C. It's fairly spread out. It's spread out over three branches of government. Yeah, but it's spread out over the executive branch. These people that are working to undermine the president have a lot of power, and I think we're seeing them use it to stop him from some of the things he wants to do.
Well, and I think it's fair to say that if we take our lessons from history, we see examples littered throughout history of governments that do increasingly seize power over the people. And so I think it is something at least worth watching today. Tommy, one more article maybe to get to and one more conversation, and that is that our president is contemplating an executive order around Google and social media and possibly the monopoly that they have on information in our culture. Where do we stand with that?
Well, you know, I think Google is a private company, but it is an extraordinarily powerful private company. We, users of Google, we have turned over every shred of information about our lives to Google. There's every reason to believe that they are biased. There were tapes of their executives, I think that was 2 weeks ago, that those tapes came out sort of crying in the aftermath of Donald Trump being elected. I don't know that the answer is a lot of government oversight. I think that the answer probably lies in the contract between the users and the company. I think we need to wise up as users and vote with our feet, so to speak. I'll also say, though, when President Trump sort of sets his sights on an entity, he's going to do some damage. He set his sights on the NFL. A little more than a year ago now, and he did some damage to the NFL, to their brand, to their profits, to their public corporate partnerships. I expect that he will do some damage to the brand and credibility of Google. The last thing I want to say about Google is that the news that they're doing business in China, that they are willing to do whatever it is the Chinese government has demanded of them, and we could speculate what that is, but that's disappointing because the internet is a really powerful tool, and it seems like it's going to be limited in China through this, through what Google is doing there. So I think President Trump has chosen somebody to go after. That's, you know, he has good reason to do that. But I'm also wary of trusting the government more than we do a private company. I don't have any more faith in the government, not to be biased. It, you know, speaking of the deep state conversation we just had, yes, Google is biased, but so is the government. So I think the whole thing is a little scary.
Oh, boy, yeah. Some interesting tension there between having the free flow of information and the government regulation. That is a tricky one to hold, the tension between. Tommy, thanks so much for joining me on Tuesday mornings like you do here on Faith Radio Mornings. And I would love to get any live updates that you have on Thursday as things are proceeding in Judge Kavanaugh's hearing, as well as what's happening out of the Justice Department. You do a great job with us, so thank you.
Well, we will confabulate on Twitter or on text, and we'll go from there.
I love the usage this morning, Tommy. Have a great rest of the morning, and we'll look forward to chatting soon.
Talk to you soon.
We'll take a break here for Lighten Up and Bottom of the Hour News. And when we come back for the second half of our hour, I'll be joined by Dr. Rosemary Stein, and we'll talk about the idea of free-range kids on Faith Radio Mornings. Good news for you Scrabble players among us out there. I know we certainly enjoy these family game nights, and Scrabble is a big part of that. Scrabble is adding 300 new words to its dictionary. The newest game edition was released yesterday and added long-awaited words like okay and ooh to it. So EW is now usable in the Scrabble match. It's been 4 years since any new words were added to the game's dictionary, and there were very serious steps taken for the addition of the new words. Merriam-Webster was advised by the North American Scrabble Players Association while creating this edition. Grab your new copies of Scrabble and have a good time with Family Game Night. We'll be joined by Rosemary Stein here next on Faith Radio Mornings. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, I was joined by Nicole J. Phillips, a regular contributor to the show that talks about kindness, and she was talking about turning positive starts with being aware of your negative thoughts.
We fill our brains with hurry, worry, and jury. You know, the hurry is, okay, what's my next 15 seconds? Like you said, the worry is the, oh my gosh, are my kids going to be okay today? And the jury is making ourselves judge and jury over what everybody else is doing, and even over ourselves, and just not cutting ourselves slack and a break for maybe not being kind. And that's really important to spend today thinking about, what am I thinking about? You know, you had that quote from Charles, and it was all about anxiety. And I think that when you feel that kind of come up through your heart and through your lungs, you have to stop and think, what am I thinking about right in this moment? And is it positive? And is it adding light to this world? Or am I stuck on a hamster wheel?
That was Nicole Phillips talking about kindness and how we can become more kind in our lives. She also told an incredible story about 7 minutes long that you really must catch. It was a tearjerker here in studio for Logan and me, and my family was talking about it last night as well. So you can head to myfaithradio.com and catch that entire segment, about 16 minutes long, of Nicole J. Phillips talking about kindness. Well, I see we have Dr. Rosemary Stein on the line already, and I'm going to ask Dr. Stein a few things about parenting and kids. We'll talk about family game night and the idea of free-range children next on Faith Radio Mornings.
Here's my question to you. Who's to blame for the de-Christianizing of American public life? This is Jim Garlow. The de-Christianizing of our historical biblical foundations has resulted in a nation exploding in crime, sexual anarchy, wrecked homes and lives, leaving in its wake massive human pain. You can blame the aggressive secularists who demand the removal of anything that allegedly offends their lack of religious sensibilities, but the fault cannot be laid at the feet of the secularists or the progressives, or liberal academia, or any of the other groups that openly attack our foundations. Much of the fault lies within the church itself. Pastors tell me, we're just preaching Jesus. That's fine, but we must also preach what he preached, the application of biblical truth to every aspect of life, including national life. That's what's missing today, and to our peril. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
For a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. The medicine go down. Medicine go down.
I love that Mary Poppins music. It means that Dr. Rosemary Stein is joining me here on Faith Radio Mornings, as you often do. Dr. Stein, thanks for coming on again here this week.
Thank you. I enjoy it so much. Actually, that Mary Poppins music, it's better than coffee.
It is better than coffee. It kind of just starts our day with that sort of sweet jolt of energy to get through our day. And Dr. Stein, I know you run a clinic for families and for kids that really help our children holistically, not just physically, but relationally and spiritually. And as you're dealing with families, I have to ask, do you see a lot of family game nights still happening? I know it was a big part of my growing up. We played Michigan Rummy last night as a family. I see that Scrabble just came out and updated their dictionary with 400 new words. Is this part of family life that you see, or is that a bit of a dying art?
I think, sadly enough, I think it's mostly dying art. I do see a couple of families that tell me that today is game night, and the kids are so excited about it. It's sort of like taking a leash out for a doggy and waving it around, telling them it's game night for the kids. But we're not dedicating ourselves to that because we think that it's not important. And that the time spent around the table as a family doesn't have its place. And, well, sadly enough, that's not true. So I think that all of us that are listening need to reflect on that and make the time for your children. They will listen to the unsaid, the unrecounted message of just spending time with you and not necessarily watching the football game and just looking at the news or anything else that you guys do, or just playing on a video game, just spending time with you with a simple board game. You're worth my time, and you're worth something silly that I would do with you.
It will
be better than medicine.
And I was going to ask how important it is to sort of try to see the world and remember the world through the lens of maybe a 5-year-old or a 7-year-old or a 9-year-old. I know last night my 8-year-old was just devastated that he didn't get a chance to get his bowl of popcorn or get a couple extra rounds of Michigan Rummy. And that really is legitimate devastation. And so to see it through their eyes really helps us come around as parents about what we need to do.
And you made a good point that if you play a game that you knew as a kid, your memories will come back. It'll be like you were 8 again. And then you'll start sharing that with your kids. In my home, we play cards, and also we play dominoes. And since I played dominoes because my family's from the Dominican Republic, when I was a little girl, I'll start, you know, going over those memories, and Hannah will chime in the memories. She'll do the little things that I did as an 8-year-old, even though she's much older than that at this point, because those memories are her memories now. And so choose to, if you're going, I would like for everybody to do that. But if you do, choose games that you played as a kid and watch what happens. It's amazing with the kids. They will absolutely adore it. At first, they might roll their eyes and say, oh, no, not again. But it will become part of who they are.
This is Dr. Rosemary Stein talking with us each, about every other week here on Faith Radio Mornings, about just parenting tips and how we can come around our kids and dealing with the challenges of the day. And Dr. Stein, I had somebody on the program last week, Jonathan Haidt from New York University, who was talking about the fact that maybe 20, 30 years ago, the average age that parents began to let their kids out on their own for the first time was right around 7, 8, or 9 years old. And then as a result of some of the kidnapping headlines that took place in the 80s and 90s, we became increasingly protective to the point that now the average age has jumped up to 13 to 15 years old. And it sure sounds like there is a pushback or a pendulum swing away from this overprotection, at least among some, that are starting to just let their kids roam through the woods or through the parks. And it's this idea of free-range children. So talk us through this, Rosemary, and in terms of the importance of letting our kids have independence.
Well, it's true. We had such different memories from what our kids have today, and a lot of it revolves around the way the communities are set up. We used to be able to walk to school, walk ourselves back to school, from school. Many of us were latchkey kids where we could walk from and to school and then open the door and get inside, even by the time we were 8 or 9. I remember those were some of my memories, and that formed me.
But our kids today don't have those kinds of experiences. But we also had the kind of experiences where we lost a key and mom had to come in after work maybe and see us on the stoop. And we had to say, I'm sorry, and you had to cry because you were not responsible with something that she had given you. Those things really formed you. They made it so that you knew where to put the key from there on out. It was the falling, the mistake that you might have made as a kid that made it so that you understood how to handle yourself. But we're not letting our children make mistakes because we are, in a sense, overprotecting them. But we don't do this just as parents. We're doing it as a society. So I would say that take a step back and look where you're able to take some risk. Don't go all out and make it so that you're putting your child in peril, but you need to be able to make the small risks that your child's going to be able to take. And you tell your kid, you prepare your child beforehand and say, these are the things that might happen. And, you know, if some of these things happen, it's okay. We'll talk about it and we'll go over how you can protect yourself. But with risk, there is the possibility that something not so great is going to happen. And because of that, the child will grow. And you have to be able to ascertain what kind of risk and what kind of danger you're able to assume. So there's a big balance in that. It's not easy to be what they're calling now free-range kid. But it's not about just being a free range. If it's free range, but you just did it because, that's not going to create a great product. What creates a great product is for the child to be exposed to an environment that is a good environment, a growing up environment, and a maturing environment for that child. And that's where you'll get the best thing that you can for him.
But I think that risk exposure, if we allow them to do sort of stupid small things at age 9 or 10, does it make it maybe less likely that they'd run into sort of big dumb things maybe at 16, 17, 18, 19 when they feel a little bit released from it? Is it helpful to just sort of expose them to risk along the way like that?
Exactly. So choose small things right around 5 or 6 that you think are worthy projects or things. It can even start with, look, I'm going to let you do your homework by yourself when they're just starting off in second grade, and I'll look over it, and if there are mistakes, I'll let that happen. Your kid might call you and they might say, I forgot my lunch, and you might say, well, you're going to have to figure it out. Don't run back and just say, here's your lunchbox that you left. Will your kid be hungry? Yeah, he'll have to figure out how to mooch off of one of his friends. And they'll do that. But don't catch your child for every little mistake and every little situation. They have to fly on their own sometimes, and that's how you build a resilient child.
It's Dr. Rosemary Stein talking with us on Faith Radio Mornings about just how we can parent our kids and maybe as grandparents, too. I know you play a very active role in kids' lives quite often. And when we come back from break, Rosemary, I'd love to get your perspective on some government regulations, maybe at least brought forth in California, that our kids need more sleep, so they're changing the school time. But maybe government regulation isn't the best way to go about doing this for our kids. So more to come with Dr. Rosemary Stein on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined on the line by Dr. Rosemary Stein, who comes on regularly here on Faith Radio Mornings to just talk about issues around parenting and our kids and grandparenting, how we can best have our kids grow up to be healthy and whole emotionally and spiritually and physically. And Dr. Stein, before the break, we were talking a bit about building up risk tolerance for our kids, certainly on a physical level as they make mistakes. But does this extend as well to having conversations or about things going on in our country that we can expose them to gently, not overwhelm them with some of the headlines, but kind of grow them up with different ideas as well to expose them so they're not quite so concerned by the time they get to college and beyond that they can even have hard conversations?
Yes, exactly. And we were talking about how many times the government wants to impose what their rules are because parents aren't stepping up. And we see this happening more and more in so many different ways. But one way is that one state, California, has decided to tell us that the children need more sleep, so therefore school all over the state is going to start later. And I think that the idea of children needing more sleep is an absolutely correct one. But on the other hand, I think that the government oversteps its boundaries when it tells us how to raise our children.
Yeah, it's such an important conversation to have, and especially about responsibility. I know we have a caller on the line from Bismarck. That's John. And John has a question for you, Dr. Stein, about Alliance. So, John, good morning. Thanks for joining Faith Radio Mornings.
Good morning.
So, yeah, what's your question for Dr. Stein?
I was just kind of curious. What is a proper age, do you think, to start with, allowance? Like, my daughter's 4, my son's 6, and me and my wife has already started, but they had to do, little chores around the house, make sure they stay up on top of cleaning their room and helping out with dishes here and there. Do you think that would be too young of an age for my daughter, or how would that affect them in the long run? Do you think they'll put more of a focus on the money instead of God itself?
That's a great question, John. Dr. Stein, what would you say to John?
No, I don't necessarily think that it would put more focus on the money. I mean, we live on Earth, so money is going to be of some importance no matter what. And just because you introduce it early doesn't mean that they'll put more focus on it. On the other hand, before we start giving them an allowance, they need to show an interest in having money. And what is money? And why can you go up to, the McDonald's and hand over money and you get a Big Mac? It doesn't make sense. Other places you give them paper, you don't get something back. So the kid has to be genuinely interested in this concept of how does money work and what is happening there. And then you explain that money is stored labor or stored work. And the kid starts thinking, wow, what does that mean? Well, mom and dad go to work. And you get something called money. And that money means that mom or dad worked, and you're exchanging that for things that you might need. You can work, too. And so what I'm saying is that you have to introduce the concept, that you have to build that up. And you have to. And I think it's interesting to the kid if you say, so starting at this age in our home, we're going to go ahead and do that. And because you're this age and you have more work, you get this amount of money. And because you're this age and you get less work, you get this amount of money. And it's not that you're a boy or you're a girl or you're this, it's just that you do different things. And for different things, I might give you an X amount of money. These are just examples of things to think about and how to introduce this concept so that you make it so that it's something that they value, that they treasure, that they'll think about, and that they'll be able to understand the concept of money. And so that's what I would say, just and small things to start with that they're able to do but are a little bit challenging, because it needs to be challenging for them to grow and to mature. So think about what challenges them and what they might not like so much, but they could grow to like, and think of some of the chores that you used to do when you were a kid.
Dr. Stein, John, thanks for the question. Dr. Stein, great answer to the allowance question. Do you think ages 4 and 6 is too early for that, or do you think you can start at that age, or maybe 8 and 10? What would you suggest is a good age to have those conversations?
I think that it depends on the child. Like I said, if they start showing an interest in what is money and how do I get money, I think that that's a time to pursue it. If the child is completely disinterested in what is money, how do I get money, how do I go into a store, then you're going to be spinning your wheels because that kid's not going to really get the lesson. It's all about really a fun lesson more than anything else, which builds responsibility. But the kid's going to give you the cue. There's no real set age, but I would say probably around 6 to 8 is when they start really being interested, and you can start teaching them about different bills and money and the concept of exchanging work for money.
Dr. Stein, we have just about a minute left or so, but I want at least to have you touch on the conversation coming out of California that they are mandating potentially that schools have to start at a later time to give kids an extra possibility of sleep. But at the end of the day, is it their parent responsibility to have our kids go to sleep at the right time and get the sleep they need as opposed to the government?
It sure is. And I see this all the time. The kids are tired. They're not working well. They're irritable. They're not having breakfast at home. And then everybody's wondering why the kid's not doing well. And when I start asking them what time the kids are going to sleep, I'll get an 8 or a 9-year-old that says he's going to sleep at 10. And whoa there, I'll talk to the kid about why it's important so the kid can go home and accept what mom and dad have to say. And mom will almost always turned around and said, you see? And it's like we're ceding our authority back to our children because we think that when our children tell us something, Johnny's also going to sleep at 10, that that's relevant. And so go back to when you were a child, what time were you going to sleep? And then you build that and you say, okay, the time for this year old child is this age, and that's the way we set the rule. And for the government to impose on us what time and how much sleep they should be getting, it's merely because we're not stepping up as parents.
And Dr. Stein, that's so helpful. Just the tips that you have for parents and for grandparents. And if our listeners want to engage with more of your information and other places, they can reach out to contact you?
Absolutely. I have a page on Facebook. That's Rosemary Stein, M.D. And I do have a couple of web pages that I have. They're also Rosemary Stein, M.D., or based on my book, which is Who Needs a Village? It's a Mom Thing, which you can also buy on Amazon. But I'm in North Carolina. I have a busy practice. And so if you happen to be in the center part of North Carolina, look up IFC Pediatrics or International Family Clinic. And my motto at the clinic is parents need to be in the driver's seat.
Love it, Dr. Stein. Thanks so much for joining us here on Faith Radio Mornings and look forward to our next conversation. We'll take a break and we'll wrap up the first hour of our show. Love the conversation with Dr. Stein, and I see that Bruce Ashford, theologian, is up next, and we're going to talk about the natural evil of hurricanes and the impact that has on our lives on Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.